The greatness of a man is not in how much wealth he acquires, but in his integrity and his ability to affect those around him positively. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 32 of Making Comics Gutter Talk. My name is Adam Greenfield. We have a really good show for you today, but that quote was from Bob Marley. Obviously he's known for his reggae music, but personally I think he was known just as much as an activist. All in all, I think he was definitely one of those amazing human beings that was definitely taken away from us way too soon. So, if you don't own Legend, I definitely urge you to make that priority number one at the end of this episode, of course. Also, just a quick thing. Some of you may wonder why I start these intros with a quote. Really, each one I choose has something to do with the podcast you're listening to. If you know me well, then I can really be a grumpy old man sometimes. So, these positive quotes do not come to me naturally. But I've gotten better over the years, so that's a good thing. The beginning quote... it's somewhat of a foreshadowing, so, anyway, I'm not sure why I felt the need to mention that or even why I waited 32 episodes to tell you, but there it is. Anyway, today's episode is a fantastic one. I sat down with Dan Mashburn. He is the owner of a local printing and marketing company here in San Diego called Hey Chris, Inc., H-A-I-C-H-R-I-S. We recorded this on site, so the noises you hear in the background sometimes are just the noises of the printing business. I kind of like it. I don't know, it kind of adds a little bit of character to the show that already has a lot of character. It's a great talk. Got to know where Dan came from, what he's doing now, why he's doing it, as well as actually some really great advice for not just finding a good local printer to use if you're in the market for a printer, but really what you can do to make the process smoother. And that's a really big thing. You don't really think of what you can do. I mean, think of it as a handshake. You know, you can't just be a limp fish when you throw your hand out there. You gotta give more. You know. So anyway, there's a give and take, and Dan definitely gives you some advice on what you can do to make that a smooth handshake. So yeah, speaking of, let's get on with it. Let's handshake the show. I have no idea what that means, but yeah. Anyway, Dan Mashburn.
Suck it up. Welcome to the 21st century.
Most of the podcasts I've heard, I haven't heard a lot of them, but a couple that I've heard,
they're raunchy.
Yeah, it's like a free open spectrum.
Yeah, spectrum is a very good word for that. Spectrum. I'll have to remember that. Alright, so I guess we can go ahead then and get started. We are sitting down with Dan Mashburn. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good, good. And are you the owner?
Yes.
This is Hey Chris.
Hey Chris, Inc., yes.
Hey Chris, Inc. And just give people an idea of, we'll get into the details later, but give people an idea of what you're doing here at Hey Chris.
Well, you know, Hey Chris... the concept of Hey Chris is to be a marketing company, and we help a lot of companies and people market themselves or their products. And the back end of that is we have to have equipment. We're really big into direct mail, so we have to have a certain amount of equipment to produce the direct mail campaigns. And that kind of led us into, you know, doing some printing for some people and posters and comic book stuff for the comic book industry, which Comic-Con's coming up, so yeah, we've been busy. And so we figure if we got the equipment, we might as well use it. And so that kind of led us into the whole printing part of it.
Okay. We'll definitely get into the details of that. As everybody knows, let's kind of take a step back, sort of towards the beginning. We're in San Diego, so are you from San Diego?
No, but I've been here long enough that my roots are in the ground.
They're pretty deep.
They're in deep.
How long have you been here?
I've probably been here for about 30 years.
Wow, yeah, that's in. So where did you come from?
I grew up, born and raised in San Bernardino, which is still Southern California, but we always call it the other side of the tracks. And, you know, we used to come down to San Diego and surf.
Okay.
And then, you know, we graduated high school, and my best friend and I, Rob, you know, we got together and said, hey, what do you want to do now? You know, we're out of school. We're supposed to go to college. And I said, well, I don't know. He said, let's go to San Diego. Yeah, I said, let's go. And we never looked back.
That's the best way to do it. I did the same thing on the way out. I started back east, and the last stop before here was Iowa. And a couple friends of mine and I were like, let's do it. San Diego, never been. Let's go. And we've all decided that this is where it's at.
So. Yeah, oh, yeah. In fact, our first apartment we ever had, it was in Point Loma. And I would ride my bike through the neighborhoods, and I go, oh, my God. I was making like $1.50 an hour, right, mm-hmm. going to college. And I would ride through these neighborhoods, and I would go, oh, my God, I couldn't imagine living here, right? And it was really funny. A couple of years ago, I you know how you have that the big idea in your head? And I was going through my neighborhood, and I went, oh, my God. I live in the neighborhood. I used to ride my bike around I can't believe if I lived here.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I guess then when you were younger, I mean, is this a direction that you thought you would go? What did you want to do?
Oh, God, no. I wanted to marry Rich.
Well, of course. Yeah, don't we all?
And never work again.
Right. Yeah.
But you know what? I went to college for advertising. And,
okay.
But that was back then, you know, I have to say back then. I'm an old guy. Back then, it was under the journalism program.
Yeah.
So I had to go through journalism to get an advertising, and it was kind of a, you know, journalism with an emphasis in advertising mm-hmm. is what it was. And I got to tell you, I got into the classes, and I was, you know, I was probably a couple semesters from graduating, and I went, I don't want to do this. This is not what I want to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to be advertising, but I didn't want to be journalism. And it was rough on me, and so I actually switched majors to sports medicine.
Sports medicine?
Yeah.
Why'd you go to that one?
I loved exercising.
Okay.
And I thought, if I could work out, and I thought about having a sports medicine clinic. They mm-hmm. didn't have them then, and I thought that would be a really cool idea for rehabbing people and working with people. And then I started up this little tiny company, and I remember calling my parents, and I said, hey, you know, my company's taken off. And I don't have time for school. I gotta pick one or the other. And they said, well, what are you going to college for? And I said, to get a job. And I remember my dad said, sounds like you already got one. And I said, and he says, by the way, you're paying for it, so do what you want, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, okay. And I dropped out of college and started up basically, and I was doing direct mail stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And dropped out of college.
Where'd you go to school? College.
San Diego State.
San Diego State. All right, the Aztecs.
And I call it my alma mater. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
They've always been the Aztecs.
Have they? Weren't they? Am I thinking of UCSD that had to? Wasn't there one that had to change the?
Oh wait, yeah, the mascot.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
I want to say that it
was San Diego State, but they didn't change. Did they change it?
Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know.
Man.
I vaguely remember hearing something about that.
Oh, well, I know the Redskins are having issues.
Well, yeah. This isn't a sports podcast, so I guess we can step away from that.
We're taking a tangent.
Yeah, I don't mind tangents at all. And if the listeners already know, we take those all the time.
Okay, good. I'm good at that.
Yeah, no, there'll be plenty of those here. All right, so you went to San Diego State. If you don't mind me asking, about when was this?
This was probably in the late 70s.
Late 70s.
Yeah.
Okay, so... So you went in initially thinking advertising, and I guess in the late 70s, that was a big market, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was just starting to become a thing in college. Mm-hmm. They just started talking about it. They didn't have advertising degrees.
Right.
But you know, it was starting to become a little buzz, you know.
Okay. So you did that. You started the sports medicine?
I was going to go sports medicine.
But you didn't. Okay.
I didn't. I loved it, though. I loved the class. I had the best time.
What caused you to not pursue it?
That was the I had this company I started
you started the company.
Yeah,
okay. And that company was?
You know, it was really, you talk about dumb companies, but it really worked well for me.
Yeah.
I would go down, I was, at the time, we had a Franklin Ace 1000 that my girlfriend's dad had given her.
Okay.
And I figured out that you could keep mailing lists on this Franklin Ace 1000. And so I got a couple of clients, and I was keeping their mailing list because this is back when computers weren't really happening. You know, you're talking late 70s. This is
my dad was into them. We had all kinds of them around the house.
So. Did you really?
Yeah, the apples and all kinds of pieces lying around. And
So I started just as a sideline. I was working at a warehouse down in downtown San Diego. And so just for fun, I would keep people's mailing lists. And then they said, hey, if you're keeping the mailing list, you might as well learn how to mail this stuff out because we take the list and we give it to this other company and they mail our stuff out. I thought, oh, I got to look into that. Well, along the way, somebody came up and approached me and they said, hey, you know what? You should keep a new business list. And so I figured out that if I went down to the county records, you could go through all the DBAs where people are filing for fictitious name statements.
Right.
And I would go down there and I would handwrite everybody who filed for that day. I would come back and compile it on my computer, and then I sold the subscription list to companies like alarm companies and, you know, newspapers wanted you to file in their thing. And so I was selling a 3-month subscription for like, you know, $75 or something. And I was making way more than I was at my little part-time job. And it just took off from there.
How long did that last?
That was Direct Mail Works, and it was up in, that was a great, great company. And it lasted probably about 12 years.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So it had a good run.
It had a great run. That was a rocking company.
Yeah.
And I should have never got rid of it. But, you know, I think sometimes in life you get to these roads and you're afraid to go past. And I'd gone through a divorce. It cost a lot of money, and I had to pay a lot, and then all of a sudden I had these debts, and I got nervous, and so I took on a couple of partners, and that just didn't work out, and I just said goodbye.
Did you sell it to the partners? Is that how you kind of got out of that?
Kind of. Okay. You know, I took on, I sold 2/3 of it, a third and a third, and I kept a third.
Okay.
And, you sell a third of a company, and if you're working 200% of the stuff, it's like, I don't think I need to do this. I can go on my own.
Right.
And so I lost a lot of money in the deal, but my wife now, mm-hmm. you know, we were dating at the time, and she says, I can't believe you're walking away from that money. And I said, but I'm buying my freedom. I said, I know people that would pay 10 times more for their freedom. And I said, I think I'm getting a bargain. And I walked away and just moved down the road and moved on.
You know, I was talking recently with someone about risk and taking risk. Have you ever been a risk taker?
You know, I never considered it a risk.
Okay.
Because I always, you know, people think self-employment or owning businesses is risky. And I mean, one time a guy told me, and he said, you know, I said, oh, I'm always nervous. It's, you know, Frankie, it would probably be easier to go have a job working for somebody. And he says, that's way more risk. You have no idea what's going on. You know, one day you could be let go and you have no foresight as to why that happened or when it's going to happen. He says, at least when you have your business, you know if you're going down. You know when it's going right, when it's going left, and you're controlling it. He said, that's, you know, and ever since then I kind of, you know, self-employment, there's risk because you take on debt. You do this, you know, there's a lot of things that go along with it.
Sure.
But I think people are getting, I think business today is becoming much smarter. I mean, I think for me personally, I reduce risk. We're paying off any debts we have. We operate strictly from cash flow.
Okay.
You know, and our growth has been phenomenal. But, you know, the more debt we pay off, the less risk we have.
Yeah.
And so I never really considered it being a risk taker. A risk taker to me would be somebody who just goes out and, you know, signs a note for $4 billion and opens up a restaurant that's selling seafood down next to another seafood restaurant.
Right, right.
That to me is risky.
No, I see what you're saying. So, after the after you got out of that other company, did you start this one? Did you come straight to this? How did you get?
Oh no, I went all over the place. I had it probably lead up to what we're doing. And so, I had this direct mail company, and I bought out a printing company because I thought all this stuff that I'm mailing is coming to me from a printer. Mm-hmm. If I had the printing, I can control it and make more profit. Right. I could have more revenue because I could print it and mail it. And it'd be better service to my customers because they don't have to wait for the printer to get it to me, then I get to mail it. And so I bought this printing company out, and I could never make it run. I mean, I could never, it never made money.
What was the,
never made
what was
money.
The hurdle?
I didn't know anything about printing.
That's usually the big start.
So I bought this printing company out. And at the time, it was like, you know, revolutionary. You know, people were coming by going, wow, you incorporated printing with mailing. That's a great idea, you know. And mailing houses were really interested at the time. Like, oh, how's it working? And what are you doing? I could never make the printing work because I wasn't a printer. And I would hire people to come in and run the printing department. And I figured out that every time you hired a new person, you got rid of them, and the next person would come in, and they would have you change everything. Well, you got to use these things and this thing, and that, and it always cost a fortune. So I sold the, you know, I sold the business. We'll call it sold the business. I sold the business, and I took some time off. Did a road trip with my wife up to Canada for a month.
Wow.
It was Canadian Rockies, best trip ever.
Yeah.
You know, and. You know, I played around a little bit. I got a little stint at the Museum of Art. A friend of mine turned me on to him, and I remember we used to do the art gallery, setting up for the shows. That was awesome. A great learning experience.
How so? What did you?
You know, I learned a lot about art.
Okay.
And how to handle art, number one. And you know, they would build the walls, and we'd hang the art.
The lighting.
And the light. It was awesome. I mean, it was great because you'd see it just this empty shell, and then, you know, a week later, 2 weeks later, there's all this magnificent art hanging up on the walls, and it's a story. You walk through it, it tells this great story. Yeah. And I loved doing that, and the people I worked with were phenomenal. But it was a minimum wage thing. You know, I wasn't making any money. I was just keeping busy. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, I gotta do something. I don't have enough money to not work forever.
You can't live on that. Yeah.
Right. So I started. So I thought, you know, that printing thing always bugged me because I could never make it work. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna learn how to print. I'm gonna learn how to print myself. And so I remember Tom O'Neill. Tom O'Neill, if you're ever out there, call me, say hi. Tom had this press for sale. It was probably the bottom of the line press you could ever buy, and I called him up and I said, look, I'll buy your press, but you have to teach me how to run it. He said, great. And so we became really good friends. I put it in a garage that I had, and Tom would come by and he taught me how to run this machine. And at first it was called the Envelope Factory, and I printed envelopes for people and printed thousands, hundreds of thousands of envelopes. And
how many can you run through in a single day?
But single day, I would run like myself. I would run about 80,000. I would work like all day and just. But I had, it was all automated. I set this stupid little press up with conveyors and feeders, and I would. It was nonstop, you know. And I would do push-ups, you know, while I was running and work out, you know. And then I keep running, and then it became a whole game of how many can I run. And we would run, you know. Today 80,000 is nothing, but back then on the sole press, you know, I'd run 10 hours, you know, just. Just jamming this thing.
Sure, sure.
And I learned how to run the press. And then once I got busy enough, I started hiring pressmen to come run this press. But it was a different ball game than before because I actually knew how to run it. So they would come in and they, you know, I'd leave and come back and they go, oh, I only ran 1,000 pieces because XYZ. And I'd say, well, wait a minute.
You didn't need to do XYZ.
XYZ is not even in the picture here. Right, you need to do, you know, ABC.
Which has been already laid out and established.
Right. And so then I could get on the press, I could turn it on, adjust it, and run it. And say, you know, you're lying to me, basically.
Yeah.
And that made all the difference in the world. And then from there, it built up, I bought bigger presses, and it became the factory at the time. And we just started printing, and I started doing a lot of wholesale work for people. Because I also had another company which was Hey Chris, mm-hmm. which was doing the, I did a lot of marketing consulting. And so I had a, one major client, and he had you know, three or four companies, and we took them from, $120,000 a year to $25 million in 5 years.
Wow.
And so I was pretty busy with that.
Yeah.
And so the printing, I was kind of like, it was one of those, well, if I could just pay, if I could make my house payment, I'd be stoked, mm-hmm. right? If the printing just paid the house payment, I'm happy, right? So there was no, it never had any, it wasn't like, go, go, go. It's like, you know, just get a couple jobs in a week, we'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And the consulting took, you know, the consulting was what I was into, and the marketing part of it. And then he died, and that business kind of went south, and then I bailed out of that.
Okay.
And it got into the printing a little heavier, but then it eventually closed that down because I had a partner that, you know, got some illnesses. And
didn't work out.
That didn't work out. So, you know, you got to go through a lot of don't work outs to get to working out.
Well, and you take away something each time it doesn't work out. I think what you were just talking about, how the first time you tried it, you didn't know printing, you know, and then from that, you had the desire to learn printing, you know, and then that's every failed thing can lead to a success.
Oh, I think, you know, I mean, you hear it all the time, but it's true. I mean, failure is, I mean, you can't go upstairs without taking steps up, right? And failure is a step. I mean, I love a failure. A failure, you just go, all right, that's one step closer to the top, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I have no problem with failure, as long as it doesn't, you know, bankrupt my family.
Major failures. Yeah, yeah, those you got to watch out for.
I'm not pushing a cart down the San Diego River yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. But yeah, I think failures are awesome, and it's true. If you learn from them, you know, you just can't beat yourself up for 10 years. You know, you have a failure. I think you go and you go, okay, that failed. Why did it fail?
Yeah.
Can I do anything better? And if you can't do anything better, go do something else. But if you go, you know, I think I can fix that. I can fix that right now, you know, and that's all our great inventors.
What's been some of your, not to get negative, but what's been some of your biggest failures that you've had to bounce back from?
Oh, the list is long. It's long. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's life, I guess, but, you know.
You know, I've had a few of them. And you know, some of the mistakes are probably my fault. Well, they've all been my fault, mm-hmm. but you know, I'm gonna come out and say probably one of the biggest failures I had has led to a whole kind of a life-changing attitude. And I used to have a pretty good temper, you know, and if I felt like I was getting screwed, you know, I wouldn't back down.
Yeah.
And I got into a pissy match with a pretty big company. And I was like, hey, let's go in the boxing ring. If we can't settle it, let's go in the boxing ring, and whoever comes out wins, right? I don't care. Let's just settle this thing.
Right.
And there was a big company. I won't name the names, but they buried me.
Yeah.
they beat me up good.
Yeah.
And it was all because, you know, I was arrogant. And I was right, but I went about it the complete wrong way. You know, I was an asshole.
Yeah.
and since then, I've done a lot of work on, you know, yeah, you know, it's kind of like, it's like that whole mantra of, you know, you're going down the, somebody, you know, acts rude to you,
mm-hmm.
but you have no, you know, you don't have any idea what's going on in their life.
In their life, right, right.
And you never stop to check it out. You just go, that bastard's rude to me. What an asshole, right? And you just, and that's where you go from. That person's an asshole. And they did something to me, not realizing that that person's husband just died, and they're in left field.
Right, and that's that. I get that a lot when I'm driving. When I first moved here especially from Iowa, I was a bit freaked out. And now that I've gotten used to it, for the next few years, I was angry. You know, like, get out of the left lane if you're not going to pass anybody. You know, or don't. You know, why did you cut me off? You know, it's just like, but just like as you said. If you take yourself out of yourself for a second, put yourself where they are, and think, maybe there's something else going on. There's another side to every story.
Right.
So, yeah, I totally agree with you that you don't know what's going on.
I have an ability. I think it's a gift. I call it a gift.
Okay.
Most people would not call this a gift. But I have a gift of immediate karmic reaction. I mean, it's not like I don't have to wait a year. It's going to happen to me right away. And so, let's say somebody cuts me off.
Yeah.
And I go, what a jerk off, right? Within like an hour, I'm cutting somebody off. And I go, oh my God.
I
just cut somebody off and I was just pissed off at that other person.
Yeah.
That happened so many times to me after this one incident.
Right.
With this big company. That started happening to me a lot. And I went, I need to have a better reaction. I need to realize that we're all the same. People are people. We make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I got to be way more loving, accepting, and giving, rather than it's all about me and everybody else screw you.
And
you
it's hard sometimes to recognize that trend that you're in, that cycle, you know, of being mad at somebody but then doing the same thing just a little while later.
It's all the time.
Yeah.
And I started laughing at it after a while. Somebody would cut me off, and I'd laugh. I'd go, "Oh man,
I'm gonna do that in an hour anyway."
Take the space, baby. It's all yours,
right,
man.
Right. Yeah, please.
I'll move over. And I'm completely content. And now life has become a lot more mellow, a lot more giving. But
So, has that been your biggest? I guess how you handle it, how you handle other, I guess hurdles that come up now. Do you just take a step back? I mean, what's your way of handling these failures and coming back?
Well,
and then I promise we'll get back to the printing.
Yeah, you know what? No. I love these questions, actually. I think now, I think about something before I do it. Mm-hmm. I take that extra pause and say, hang on a second, like right now, I'm getting ready to switch from Verizon to T-Mobile. I don't want to make a mistake. I've been with Verizon for 1,000 years.
Right.
Back when it was U.S. West, I mean, it was like, I've been with them since cell phones were invented.
Yeah.
And so, I'm getting ready to switch because it's a little expensive and, T-Mobile's got some great plans. So anyways, I don't want to make a mistake. So I take a step, instead of just rushing into it, you take a step back, you kind of analyze things a little bit differently, and then eventually I'll make a decision. And if it's a mistake, I'll say it's not a mistake. It was just change, And I can always change back. I didn't hurt anybody. Nobody died. I'm still got my health. You go through all those. Nothing really changes.
It's a checklist.
Yeah, and so you do make the best decision you can. And sometimes you don't make the good decision. And you just say, oh, well, so what? Didn't happen. I'm going to do it different next time.
Yes. There is definitely a mind frame that you have to have. And just a way of behavior. I was at a party many years ago, and somebody spilled a drink. And they were like, oh, I spilled this drink. And he was like, I made a mess. And this girl walked up, and she was like, it's not a mess. It's an opportunity to clean.
Yeah.
And I thought about that, and I'm like, that is one hell of a perspective.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't live it most of the time since then. But, recently, it's just like, okay, well, if that didn't work out, how can that benefit me?
Yeah.
So, and that's a heck of a perspective to try to keep.
Well, back in the late 60s, and I can't remember the person's name, it was a classical guitarist, and he was famous for if he made a mistake, and this is the famous classical guitarist, right? And he would play, and if he made a mistake on a note, the next time that note came around, he'd play it the wrong way again and accentuate it. I thought, how great is that?
Right?
Yeah. Just make it yours. Own it. That's one of the biggest problems is when there's a failure or a problem, nobody owns it.
Yeah.
They pass it off.
Yeah.
They'll put somebody else's name on it. They sell it off. They rent it out. They get rid of it. Like, I didn't do that.
Right.
We see that all the time in politics and big government, and, big companies. I'd love it if somebody just said, I fucked up.
That was on us, yeah.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things we have here. We have a saying, it's not a mistake unless it leaves the shop.
Yeah.
So we have very few mistakes here.
It's good.
We do a lot of reruns, but we don't have any mistakes.
Going out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Like Patrick was in here earlier, and he's picking up some prints, and we printed the low-res file instead of a high-res file on one of the prints. It didn't leave the shop.
Right.
So it wasn't a mistake.
It wasn't a mistake, no.
We had to fix it.
You know? And it turned out great.
It turned out nice. Yeah. But that's, you know, and I think that's one of the things, you know, when you talk about failures, I think one of the beautiful things is owning it.
Yeah.
And knowing it's okay. It doesn't change. You know, God still loves me. So what am I worried about? Right? Yeah. So you just move on.
Yep. Yeah. And you take it at face value and you just.
Yeah.
It's the next step.
And it's so pleasant to talk to somebody and just go, you know, like you'll be on the phone and somebody say, hey, you know, I thought this is, you know, they'll be a little upset because they're not used to dealing with, they're used to dealing with typical businesses, you know? And then when you come back and you go, hey, you know what? We did screw that up. I'll make it right. And they go, what do you mean you make it right? I said, we'll redo it. I'll pay for it. What do you need? What's going to make you happy? And they go, well, I don't know. What do you have in mind? You're like, we had one customer and we printed something. It was supposed to have 3 drops,
okay.
Mailing drops. And we did 2 and we forgot the 3rd drop. So he called me on it. He says, hey, I didn't get the 3rd drop because we have the seeds to go back to him. So he knows. And he said, I didn't get the 3rd drop. I said, let me check it out. I checked it out. I said, oh my God, you're right. We forgot. And I said, this is the first time this has happened. I said, I apologize. I said, but I'll make it right. And he says, what do you mean you'll make it right? And I said, I'll tell you what. I'll mail 2 more drops for you, and I'll pay for the postage. I'll pay for everything. He goes, are you shitting me? I said, no. I said, I want you to be happy. And I said, I screwed up. It's my fault. But I need to make that up to you. You were planned on these. You planned events around these things. I'll do 2 more.
Yeah.
He goes, sure, go ahead. And we did them. And he was like, he's one of our biggest salesmen now.
Yeah.
You know? He refers people all the time to us.
Yeah. And that's, you gotta take ownership for it.
Ownership is beautiful.
And make up for it.
And make up for
yeah,
it.
Yeah. There's that other half too.
What's that? Treat others as you would want, treat your neighbors as you want to be treated.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
so true. It's yeah. so easy to do.
It's not hard.
And people, you know, I think it's a step back. Yeah. Financially, it's a step back. But, in life, it's a huge jump forward. You can't jump that far.
Right. Right. You know? And it's a bigger step forward than it is a step back.
Oh yeah. The step back's mental.
Exactly.
The step forward exactly. is beautiful.
Yeah. And it's not just for you. It's for the person or the people that you're also making it up.
Yeah.
You
know, we created a little bubble of love and respect. Yeah. And I mean, there's yeah. some cool stuff that you just can't go buy off the shelf
right.
that happens when you do that.
And just as you were saying with Patrick, I mean, it's a back and forth. The fact that you helped him on that last one, you know, and
yeah.
now he's like, well, thank you very much. And whatever you need, it's a give and take. It's a relationship.
It's relationships. Yeah. And the relationship part of life is, you know, I mean, we have all this electronic Facebook and we have LinkedIn and we have all this stuff that's supposed to be relationships. But the problem is you don't have to be yourself in those environments.
Right.
You know, you could be whoever you want to be in those environments where when we're sitting across a table looking at each other, you can't really change your colors.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. 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 I can't make this gray go away.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And those relationships are, I think those relationships, I think they're kind of starting to make a comeback. I think people want to be face to face and shake hands. I don't think they like contracts, you know. We give up. If something's got small print, you got to sign it. It's right. going to be 2 years.
Right.
It's not going to get done here.
Yeah, I've been at my day job for 4.5 years, and I've talked to countless people, and I think face to face, I've maybe met one of them.
Wow.
You know, it's just like, I don't know. I wish I was there sometimes to just say, okay, let's sit down face to face and let's figure this out. You know.
Yeah.
It's just difficult. Like, I have relationships with clients, but I don't know what they look like.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know who yeah. they are. I feel like when I talk to someone face-to-face, at the end of the conversation, if I leave, I know whether they're going to talk about me behind my back. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I can get a sense of that person. But so I hope it is getting back to the face-to-face.
Yeah. I think that whole meltdown of the economy that happened in 2008, 2009,
yeah, yeah.
After that, I thought, you know, I kind of hope this sets us all back to shaking hands and say we're going to do something, and we do it, and we don't have to have lawyers in between us to talk for us.
Yeah.
And so we're just taking our whole business model back to the 60s, you know. And yeah. You know, somebody walks in and we shake their hand. You know, love doing business with you. I mean, yesterday we had about. We have like 7 or 8 comic book guys coming in to pick up posters and prints and everything.
A few days before Comic-Con.
For Comic-Con. Yeah. We had a couple more today. But they come in, and they don't come in as customers. They come in as friends.
Yeah, yeah.
It's way cool.
Well, let's get into that. Let's talk about where we're at now, currently, then. So, when did... This is Hey Chris.
Hey Chris.
Okay, and it's H-A-I.
Uh-huh.
C-H-R-I-S. How did that name come about?
Oh, I love the name. Hey Chris is my daughter's name is Haley and my son is Christopher.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
And when they were born, this is 2002, and my son was 97 and my daughter was 95, birth dates. And so in 2002, when I incorporated Hey Chris, and back then, like I said, it was a marketing consulting company. I wanted something. The original logo for Hey Chris was the yin yang and an oval.
Okay.
It's actually this one on the window here. I keep it there So
I'll try to get a picture on my way out.
Yeah, it reminds me. But they did it wrong, though. When I had that done, the art, something happened. Something dropped out. It's always something. But and to the yin-yang, the little holes on the sides, was my son's eye was looking through one, and my daughter's eye was looking through the other.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
It made the yin-yang. It had their pictures in it. And somebody said, why is that your logo? And I said, because it reminds me that I always have to do good. And I have to be a role model for my kids. And I don't want my kids to be, you know, I don't want them screwing people.
Right.
I want to be honest, upfront. I want to be that guy, right? And it's a lot of work for me because I'm a really good dishonest guy. That's easy for me.
That's easy for a lot of humans, yes. Yeah.
I live like that forever. I was completely happy.
Right.
And I had money in my pocket. But when they were born, I just said, I gotta change. I've got to change. I've got to be... you know, I gotta, you know, I just don't want to be that. I want to be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to have some value and integrity and it just, I don't know the words for it, but it's a feeling of just knowing that you did right. When you go to bed at night, you just crash.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about anything other than, I did a really good job today.
Right.
I helped 4 people I didn't know. I did this and I did, you know, you go to bed just completely blessed, happy, and tired. And so that logo reminded me. I would look at it all the time.
Every day.
Every day I'd see it, and I'd go, I got to do better than just, you know, surviving. I got to do better than that.
Right.
For other people, for me, for my family. So anyways, that's Hey Chris.
I like it. That's a good genesis of a name. I did that. So what kind of clientele do you get here? How big of a range?
Strip clubs and bands.
That's my 2 favorite things.
I'm getting into photography now.
Nice.
You know, we're all across the board. We've got a lot of nonprofits. We do a lot of nonprofits. We do a lot of broker business, which is where other people will sell the projects and they come to us to produce them.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of the comic book stuff. You know, seasonal. Although we have a couple of clients that are year-round because they travel to all the shows. And
and
we realized early on, we had a couple of guys, you know, that the poster printings and these shows, it's really a livelihood for these guys. You know, they're selling this stuff. And it's not just selling it to, you know, hey, look at me, I'm making some money. It's like, this is how they survive, how they pay rent. And so working with, you know, the comic book guys, you know, we've been working with them, like, you know, like we do a couple of them, you know, we offer if they want to do a large print, you know, like a big poster because they can sell it for more money and mm-hmm. it's like a one-off or that we can do 5 of them or whatever. We're working with them like they are a business.
Right.
Like,
right.
This is your product that you sell. How can we help you sell it? How can we help you do it better? How can we help it so you're different than somebody else and profit from it, you know? But, but so we do a lot of the comic book stuff, and I mean, we have businesses. I mean, we've got like preschools all the way up to, you know, I wish I could name a really big client. I don't know if we have a really big client, but we have a lot of clients.
So what kind of things? This is going to be such a general, basic question, but what kind of things do you print? Are you from books to single posters? Single page? I mean, how are you? What's your range there?
You know, the poster stuff, we kind of got into that. It's like a fluke. And I can't remember. I think it was a guy named Ron Padua or Tony Washington. One of those guys. Somehow, somebody knew somebody that knew us.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, can you do this? And we did a couple. And the equipment we had, it was phenomenal. I mean, they came out really vivid, really nice.
Yeah.
And we were able to do small runs. And then, you know, one person told another person, told another person. And that's kind of how that whole thing started. But we get into, like I said, we get into a lot of direct mail stuff, campaigns, variable data, variable content, which I talked to the comic book guys about. But, you know, they could be changing these things up with just minor changes or different captions or whatever. And we could print that on the fly, you know, so each one could be actually different or numbered different or barcoded. We do a lot of catalogs, a lot of catalog mailing for some places. I mean, I think our real big thing is what people will say about us is that we are very, we're very lucky, but we get these really weird ideas. And so somebody will come in and they want to market something. And we'll just come up with some really bizarre idea. And then we implement it, and it works. So
you work with... They don't... Do they come to you with their own ideas, or do you work with them to... Or both?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people come, and they bring their stuff and say, here, this is it, do it. Okay. And then some people come, and they say, you know, we had a one place, you know, they were going out of business. They said, we're going out of business. I said, well, let's see what we can do. Come on in, you know. We always say, well, it doesn't cost to talk. We'll talk for free, you know. Right. So they came in, and we talked big about benefits. And so I said, you know, what do you do that's different than the other place? You know, what do you do? What makes you special? Oh, we do this, we do that, we do this, we do that. I said, well, I kind of did some research, and there's like eight places within a mile of your place that do the exact same thing. So what do you do that's different? And they go, well, I don't know. I said, well, if you're not different, then you're selling on price. And if you're selling on price, nobody wins. It just keeps going down. Mm-hmm. I said, but if we can add something to your place that nobody else offers, now you can increase your price because they can't shop it anywhere else. So we added about four or five things to their place that nobody else was offering. You know, it was a preschool, so it was like we added Spanish.
Sure.
We added stuff that... Like, I would like that if I was a parent.
Right. You want to know about that.
Yeah. Right. So they added these benefits. And I said, now what we do is we exploit those benefits to people who could use them. So we got a list, you know, we get a lot of lists. And we get a list of people between the ages of, they were taken at 6 months, so 6 months to 3 years, or whatever it was, before they go to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And we mailed just families within those zip codes, two zip codes. It was like 600 pieces or something. I think the total thing, we only charged like $500 or something like that. I said, we're going to mail it to all these people and keep your prices the same, and we're going to exploit these benefits that we just added, and we're going to wait till you have a waiting list. Then once you have a waiting list, we'll mail again, and then when we mail again and you get that waiting list gets bigger, then you raise your prices because there's all these people that will pay the money to come to your place because they want what you offer, and they can't get it anywhere else. And that place has just been rocking.
Yeah.
And that was 4 years ago.
So did they not go out of business then?
They didn't go out of business. They've been full for like 3 or 4 years now to capacity, and they only had to do the two campaigns.
That's great.
Everything else now is referral-based and rocking, and we lost a customer.
Yeah.
Doc on it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But they're really good friends.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but you know what? I mean, that's kind of the. I took a really long route, but that's what our business is all about. So you could bring it in, you could come in, you could talk, you could bounce ideas off. We just want everybody that walks through the door to be successful.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about it earlier. If everybody walks through that door successful and they're growing, guess what? I'm growing.
So are you? Yeah.
And so it's a slow growth. It's a slow growth model, but it's solid. And you know, we have a long-term plan and a short-term plan. Our short-term plan is right now, and our long-term plan is today. And that's as far as we go out. And that's how we live it.
It probably keeps it simple.
Very simple.
And you can probably get a lot more done that way.
I can't worry about tomorrow because, man, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the whole, that was our company in a nutshell. So whatever somebody needs, whatever they need to market their company or grow their company or make themselves a dollar, mm-hmm. They come in the door. If we can, we'll do it. And we'll come up with some bizarre stuff to do it if we have to.
Right.
But it just, you know, we just throw thoughts out across the table. And we'll market if it's printing something, if it's designing something, if it's, I got a quick one. So we had another place, right, and they're a smog place. And I went over to meet with them, and they said they want to do a direct mail campaign. And so we figured out the numbers, and we're like, it doesn't make sense. You're not going to make any money. Because if you got a 1% response and we got 10,000 cars you're going to mail to, it's going to cost you $100,000 for a $39 smog.
Right, right.
But we, you know, I sit in the place and we looked across the way and there's this massive parking lot and there's this massive famous church that is just inundated with cars all day, all weekend. I said, you know what I would do? I would print up a little postcard, a nice one. And then I would have somebody go to that parking lot every Saturday and Sunday and look at the license plate. And anybody who's coming up for, you know, September, and it's, you know, like, now I got to figure out, no, I'll do, if it's July and it's June, mm-hmm. put one on the car. Not every car, just the cars that are going to use you.
Yeah.
I would do that every weekend. And that's all they do. That's their marketing campaign. It's cheap. It works.
Yeah. They probably get a lot of business out of that,
They get a ton of business. These are local people. They're going to have something's going to come in the mail where most of the people are going to have to do a renewal.
Right.
And they're going to have to get smogged.
Right.
So
is it every other year here in California? Or depending on the year.
I don't know.
Oh, you ride a bike, don't you?
I ride a bike, but I have cars. I just paid a DMV renewal that has to be smogged, actually.
Right.
but I don't know what the rule is on that.
I think before a certain year, it's like every other year you have to do it. But after a certain year, cars are starting to be built now with state regulations sort of built into the car, so they don't have to do it as much.
Oh, so they could tag into them anyways and see what's going on.
Right, right. So, anyway, it's another tangent.
Yeah. But so that's it. So okay. We will produce, and this is my long way around, which is the way I tell a story. It's a journey all the way around back, if I remember to get back. But so we will produce anything that needs to get produced for a client that will do whatever they need.
So what would you say, what's the best way then to locate and establish a relationship? Well, actually, no. Before we get into the relationships, what are some of the advantages of going with a smaller printing company?
You know...
or even local.
Yeah, I would say more local. I think it depends on I think companies should have a sense of urgency. And sometimes there's not the sense of urgency. And I think that's kind of that's a culture. A lot of times we talk about culture. We have a culture here. And like when we have to hire somebody, we hire within that culture, more so than what the talent is. They have to fit within our culture. Because we can't train that. We could train machines. We could train everything else.
Right.
And I think finding a small shop or just any shop to work with, I think you want to look, you'll know, you call them on the phone. I mean, is it like, are you going to get a voicemail system and they call you back in 3 days? That's not working.
No.
You go to see the guy and he makes you wait for 4 minutes while he walks across the room to come say hi when you walk. You know, there's little things like that.
Because knowing that, you're going to see that they may not be as conducive to meeting your deadline.
Right. Right. I mean, we got upset with somebody the other day because they kept talking in terms of maybe, possibly, it's like, I don't live in those terms.
Right, right.
I mean, Tuesday at 12, you know, yeah. Thursday at 9.
It's the shit or get off the pot kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, maybe, you know, and sometimes we'll go, you know, somebody say, how quick can I get that? I said, you know, I'm going to work hard to try to get this to you by Thursday. Mm-hmm. And believe me, we will work our ass off to get there by Thursday. What we'll try to do is get there by Wednesday.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we don't talk in, you know, specifics either. But those possiblys and maybes just don't work for me. And I don't think, I think that's kind of a, what do they call it? A road sign that maybe, you know,
it's a red flag. That
this may not, because everybody wants to work within their cycle. You know, I had a guy that worked here, and he said, you know, well, you got to tell customers that they have to work, you know, within your requirements. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. My requirements, everything else is going to take 2 years.
Right.
Pay up front, and I'll get it to you in 2 years.
And I'll sit back for a little while, and then we'll get to it eventually.
I'm going to take a vacation. I'm going to do a lot of stuff. But so I think, you know, and that goes to the relationship. I mean, you got to really, you know, everybody calls around now. I think Yelp's awesome, mm-hmm. you know. For reading reviews, but of course not everybody's going to review a place. But I think, you know, find somebody who's got a culture that's your culture, you know, and then develop a relationship with that person, with that company. Because what's going to happen is I see the relationships we have with customers and with people who walk in the door, like Patrick and other people, we're not order takers anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not, we don't want just, we talked about earlier, we just don't want your money. You know, we love your money. We need your money to survive. But, you know, I want to make sure, I have a relationship with you. I want to make sure that I'm giving you the best deal. Mm-hmm. I want you to go online. Our pricing is based off online. I go online, you know, and somebody says, how much for this? I go online, I see what the prices are, you know. Right. And I go, well, geez, you know, I found a price for $50 for that, but it's going to be $10 in shipping. So, yeah, $60, right? So that's how we price out, because everybody goes online to check pricing. So we price out online. But I want to make sure that they're going to get the best price they can. They're going to get a better product mm-hmm. than they can somewhere else. You know, we always try to use better papers and better things. But the other thing they're going to get is they're going to get a commitment that we're going to do everything we can to make them look good, look better, be prepared, be on time, you know, whatever that takes. You know, I mean, we work weekends, we work nights, we work whatever we have to get jobs done and make sure we hit the deadlines for them.
Sure.
And that's what you get with a relationship, because I'm not going to screw up. It's like doing something for your mother-in-law or your parents or your wife. You know, you got to, you know. If your wife came in and asked you to do something, you're going to jump on it and you're going to do it.
Right.
And you're going to make sure it's right, because it's your wife.
Right.
And
there will be hell to pay.
Oh, like so much hell.
Yeah. I was married once. I know what that was like.
I tell you what, I had two nuts. I was born with two nuts. And I made a couple mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'm negative three now.
Yeah, I was going to ask how many you have left. Yeah.
I walk funny because I just don't have the balance thing anymore.
That's why it's a good thing to ride a bike.
The seat. Yeah. I don't even feel it.
Yeah.
But that relationship, it's different. It's not order taking. I'm not B of A collecting money on a bill.
Right,
you know,
right.
I have a relationship with the people that walk through that door, and that relationship makes me perform at a much higher level than if I was just counting dollars.
So, what would you tell these? Let's stick with the artists. We'll kind of narrow it down and kind of keep it in our scope, because we can really get broad with this. So if we kind of we'll try to narrow it down with the artist. So what would you tell prospective artists looking for a printing company to go to? What besides the do they fit what you're trying to do, are they willing to work for you? What other things do they want to look for?
You know, one of the things I would always do is especially with the artists, Cinephile have them print out a proof for you. That's a great way to test a company out. Mm-hmm. You know, we always tell people take us for a test drive. You know, we'll compete against anybody. You know, I'll go heads up against anybody in town. But call up if you're looking at doing something. You know. First, go for convenience. Find somebody that's close by and call them up and say, hey, you know what? I want to do this. I want to do a poster. I want to do a 13x19 print of a poster. Mm-hmm. I want to send you a copy. I want to see a proof of it. Great way to test out a company. See how long it takes them to do it. You get to see the quality of the work. They shouldn't charge you for it.
Do a lot of companies, would they charge for that?
Sometimes they'll charge $25 for, we call them live proofs.
Okay.
You know, but And but it's a great way to check out how that company's going to perform for you, how it's going to work for you.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's a great way to start a relationship up with that company. Okay. You know, you're sending them a file. You're already kind of you've already started to shake hands with them. You got emails going back and forth. You're going to walk in. You're going to see the proof. You get to talk to the person.
Right.
See how knowledgeable they are. See what they will do to help you. Great way to open the door. You know, and a lot of places might say, "Nah, we don't do that." Well, that's a nice.
I'd find another place then.
Find another place.
Yeah.
But I would do that all day long because these comic book guys. I hate to be so generic, comic book guys.
That's all right.
The CMGs.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds very professional.
Yeah.
I like that.
So the CMGs.
Right. When the CMGs come in, while you're
but they all have a poster. You know, yeah, they can send a file, and they all know what they're looking for. And we've had issues. You know, we've had issues, and that's what the relationship comes into. I mean, we would get guys, and they would send us the file, and it's like, well, wait, the colors are flatter. Another color didn't pop out, you know, and we had to go back through, and, you know, we discovered that they're sending RGB files. Yeah. And RGB is great for digital, for the screen.
Right, exactly.
But print is all CYMK. And a lot of times it doesn't make a difference. But we found that certain files, you know, depending on how they're flattened or how they're built, the colors could be muted. They're a little flatter. They don't pop.
Is this perhaps the program that they're using?
It could be the programs. It could be how it's saved.
So what would you tell them to look out for then when it comes to that, to watch out for? I mean, what sign do you look for?
If they're going to print, you know, design it CYMK or convert to CYMK before you output,
okay,
before you go to a PDF, 90%, I'm not going to say 90% because I really don't know, but a high percentage of companies today, especially if it's a low print run, like not a big print run, mm-hmm, are gonna want PDF files.
Really?
Yeah, PDF files are just, we have to convert everything to PDF before we go to print. It's just the way the workflow is.
Okay.
And so everything in our shop gets converted to PDF before it goes to print.
Is it easier for them to send you the PDF file, or would you prefer having the CYMK to look for spots that might need correction?
Usually with the PDF, if it's set up packaged correctly, there shouldn't be any issues with it.
Okay.
Everything should be in it, you know, text converted to outlines. Nothing should shift. Nothing should change. Whereas if we get an InDesign file I'm thinking of some of the other ones, photo, the PS files. We get some of those design files. You know, if they're not packaged up correctly, fonts change, you know, colors can change, we're missing objects, then that becomes a nightmare. And a lot of times what we do is we ask people if they know how to, you know, package up the original, but send us a PDF.
Okay.
And, you know, if there's a problem, we'll print out proofs on it. But we would have problems with this is going back, but we would have problems with the RGB and the CYMKs. And
technology's gotten a lot better.
Oh, it's so much better.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much better. I mean, the machines we have in the back are just phenomenal quality. And, you know, they're just expensive machines.
Okay.
But, you know, it's no different than printing something out at home.
But you can also say, you know, we have the high quality.
Yeah.
You know, printing capabilities. So
yeah, yeah. You know, it's. I mean, think of it as like a $150,000 laser printer. You know, how good would that be?
You get what you pay for. For sure.
Yeah, it's pretty nice stuff.
So, do you have a horror story of somebody bringing in a bad file and perhaps having a deadline?
Oh, I got a tremendous one.
What's the worst horror story you can think of?
We do a lot of event stuff.
Okay.
You know, a lot of event stuff. We did we had four events. Every week it's like there's something, but last week we had four events, you know, that you can't miss a deadline.
Yeah.
The art files might get to you whenever, but you can't miss a deadline. So we did one. It was for a fundraiser. Okay. And the fundraiser was Friday night at 6 o'clock. And so they sent us the art files, but they had them all packaged up. You know, and we tell people, like, if you're doing like a comic book or a booklet, send it to us, you know, just one up. Don't try to paginate it, because a lot of software doesn't paginate it the right way.
Oh, well, yeah.
So, you know, you really don't have page one and page 2, you know, as you get in the book, it might be page 3 and page 17, or, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
So always give it to us one up, and we paginate it, you know, and set it up. And so they sent us the art files, and they were already paginated, so we went with their pagination. Well, we deliver the books. It's about 600 books, or programs for this event.
How big were the programs?
They were 24 page. Okay. 24 page with a cover.
Is that a standard size program? Or?
Yeah, it was pretty big.
Yeah.
Pretty hefty. So we deliver the stuff, like, you know, Thursday, the event's Friday night. Well, Friday about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get a call from the client, and they said, all the pages are messed up. She said, the event's in 3 hours, and all the pages are messed up. She goes, I don't know what to do. She says, I'm so sorry I didn't look at it before. And, of course, I'm freaking out. I'm like, luckily I drove my car that day. I went, are you at your house? She said, yes. I said, hang on. I got my car, and I'm like, I get over there, and I had to apologize to her the next day. I said, I'm so sorry I was so rude. I said I was in fix mode, right? And so she's like, oh, you want to come in and meet my husband? I don't want to meet anybody. I want to get this thing done and back to you at 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
she goes, deadline. And so I gathered everything up, and on my way back, I called everybody I knew. I called friends. I called owners of other print shops. I said, hey, can you meet me at my shop? Do you have an extra stitcher? Do you have, you know, calling anybody out of the woodwork to come in my shop? And everybody met up. And those books got delivered at 6:10.
Wow.
We delivered all the books to them. I got to tell you, I was a freaking mess, though. I was like, people were, speed it up, let's go, we're not going to make it. It was awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And then you know when your friends are, you know. And it's nice to have friends in the same industry.
Well, that's great. I was actually kind of surprised when you said that they all, like a large group of people, showed up. Like that, like that's,
yeah.
So it doesn't seem as so much of a cutthroat competitive industry then, in the smaller scale.
For a small people, it isn't. I shouldn't say it isn't, but I think when you get the big gang run stuff, they have nothing to offer except the printed product. So that becomes a price. It's a commodity, and that's competitive. Mm-hmm. It becomes pennies, and they're fighting over pennies. But, you know, that's if you want it one way. You don't get any picks on it. Yours go along with the sheet with everybody else, and they just print a unique 4-color CYMK across the whole spectrum. Mm-hmm. So you might be a hue off or what, you know. And there's a lot of good to that. It's inexpensive, and you get stuff done. But that gets competitive, and I'm sure there's a lot of competitive. I'm extremely competitive. But I can't own all the equipment I need to be in this business. So I picked a niche that we have here to be in the business, to do exactly what we need to do for our core business. But I have a friend, Vaughn, who has a great, you know, print shop with offset printing plates and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I send work to him. I have three other shops that we farm work out to,
Okay. Because
they do something specific that I just don't want it. I don't want it to build it up here. So we have these relationships, mm-hmm. and you know, it's awesome. It's awesome. We do the niche that we do for them, that we do for everybody else, you know, and they do a niche for us that we can't do, and work goes back and forth, and we get into, you know, we trade invoices. All right, you owe me $2,000, I owe you $2,000. Or I'll build up until I have a certain amount, and, you know, then we trade checks.
Well, there was a gentleman in here earlier, and this might not be a similar situation, but he came in, picked up stuff. There wasn't an invoice ready, I guess, and you were like, next time.
Yeah, Oliver. So, yeah. Yeah, he's a CMG.
the one of the CMGs.
He's a CMG.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, yeah.
So it's just maintaining that relationship.
Yeah, I know these guys. I mean, nobody's... we've been really... The last couple of years, which really has been... I mean, Hey Chris has been around a long time, but the last couple of years, I'm a slow starter.
Okay.
I'm just starting to get it. You know, things have people 21 are getting. You know, 50,000 years old. I'm just starting to get them.
Late bloomer.
Yeah, late bloomer. And I'm just, things just start clicking, you know. And it's kind of great because I feel like a kid now.
Yeah.
But things are starting to, I'm starting to get stuff. And you know, it's, we do business with people. We have these relationships with the people we work with, clients, you know, vendors, everybody. We have relationships with everyone. We have a vendor relationship with the paper store, you know, awesome relationship. We don't get, I shouldn't say it, but we don't get screwed much anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, in other businesses and stuff, I used to get screwed all the time. We're going to get paid. I don't have to hustle people. I know that times are tough sometimes, and we get in pinches too, you know. And
it's a give and take.
It's a give and take. Yeah. And I don't need to call somebody up and bust their balls to pay me. You know, they know they owe me. You know, and we don't get, we haven't been screwed very much at all. Very, very little.
Maybe that's another advantage of keeping it local then, you know, is you're going to run up against that... The people that are willing to not screw you,
yeah,
you know, they're willing to work with you,
yeah. And we do a lot of work. We do we're doing a project right now for somebody in London. We've done a lot of work for people that will. Funny, because conventions, not Comic-Con, but we'll have people call us up from outside of San Diego, saying we're coming to a convention. We had a guy from Vermont, and we did
so cool.
All of his stuff for his convention is. Program everything, and then he showed up, picked everything up, and took it to the convention. He said it was, we were lower priced. I would say cheap. People say don't say cheap, but we were cheap. We were cheaper than anybody he could find. He didn't have to ship it, and when he got here, it was all done. It was beautiful.
Do you do a lot of shipping as well?
Not. We have a lot of pickup. We have a lot of delivery. Okay. Our shipping is L.A.
So you're not
Inland Empire, Orange County.
Okay, so you're not going too far.
No, we don't go too far. But, you know, I got to say, we've been growing, like, pretty crazy, all word of mouth. I mean, I talked this big story about marketing, but my marketing is here in my bag here, and it's something I'm going to get to, and I haven't gotten to it in 2 years. And our referral base is huge.
Doesn't sound like you need to.
We don't, but it's like, you know, you have to, I mean, we're a marketing company.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, you got to market yourself while you're at it.
Yeah, we just got a website like a month ago. No, about a year ago, we put up a website, and it's, right. You know, but I think that's part of that, the relationship thing is, I mean, we're tight with people. I mean, I got one guy, he refers one person a week to me.
Wow.
Just like, you got to call this guy up. Right. And you know, I don't know if we're doing anything that great, but we do care.
Do you want to expand outside of the SoCal area?
You know, I think anybody in business wants to be huge. You know,
sure.
I want to, but you know, I thought about that too. You know, it's like, how big do you want to get? How much of your life do you want to give up?
Right.
To get back.
The right? bigger you get, the less time you have personally.
Right, yeah. And that's a huge question.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there was one time I wanted to own the world. You know, and nowadays I'm thinking. Maybe I don't, you know, I get to this mindset. Here's another tangent. I get to this mindset of what something costs and how much I have to give up of myself to pay for it. So, a new car. A new car is what, 30, 40 grand, whatever. So, okay, how much do I have to work every month to make that payment?
Right.
Is that 4 hours? Is that 1 hour? Am I willing to give up 4 hours of free time? Free time. To own a car? That's a tough question for me. And so I look at everything like that.
Yeah.
I don't look at it as my time is worth this much. I look at how much time do I have to give up? How many hours do I have to work just for that item? And that changes my whole mindset on what I purchase and what I buy and how big I want to, how much of my life do I want to give up to be big?
Where did that come from? Where did that mentality, like what, I mean, because... recently, now I'm going to go on a tangent. I guess it's my turn.
All right, your turn.
My turn, yeah. Recently, and not recently as in the last few years, I've reached a point in my life where I'm willing to give up less of my time. And I think it's because I've worked so much for not very much in return. A roof over my head. I'm not first world problems, you know, like
yeah.
I have things, you know. So I'm not saying that I regret it. But there was a lot of time that I missed because I was working.
Right.
Did you encounter this at some point, or have you always thought, I'm going to find a balance between my time and what I have to do?
Nah, I think that sometimes becomes an age issue.
Okay.
You know, you're only allowed so much time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, we're not going to live forever. We're going to die. I'm going to die long before you are. But
I don't know.
If it's an age thing, it will. Yeah. But you know, I think it's almost like Walden. I mean, it's like if, you know, I look at this, humble bragging. I mean, I've got an incredible home.
I live in Point Loma in those hills there.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. You know, I'm like, shit, I can't believe this, you know. I'm like this, I always say I'm the ghetto kid, you know. Park on the grass, you know, right. I'm going to park my car on the grass. Oh. But
a lot around here.
I got all this, you know, we have cars, we have stuff, we do vacations, you know, we do all this stuff. But the more stuff you have, the more it costs to maintain it.
Yeah.
And once you have it, you don't want to let go of it, so you end up working more. And I keep thinking, if all I had to do, I think, you know, this is going to go way out there. But I think, you know, we came to Earth. We have everything we need. We really don't need a high rise. We don't need cars. Right. We don't need all this other crap. It's all here, right?
Yep. Yep.
And I don't know when the mindset got together that it's not good to have one spear. Let's manufacture a million spears and that's sell them.
Technology.
And so I keep thinking that I all this stuff that I have, I really don't need it.
Yeah.
I think we would all be fine living off. I mean, it's primitive, but living off the land and having, like when Walden goes and he goes to this lake and he builds his house and he creates his little farm, he found out that instead of working 8 or 9 hours a day to maintain his life in the city, he's working like an hour and a half a day, and the rest of the time was his own.
Yeah.
And he had everything he needed. And there's a balance there, of course, because we're,
sure,
you know, we're 2000, whatever, 14.
100-some-odd years ago.
Yeah. And so there's a balance. You got family, you got kids, you got wants, desires, all that stuff. But I think, you know, for me, as I'm getting older, it's not so, it's more about sucking up as much of what is here that I can. And free time anymore, you know, with cell phones and email and all this other crap, I'm accessible 24 hours a day. And it's really hard for me, you know, if a call comes in at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, it's really hard for me to let that go.
Right.
I got to pick it up. I mean, what if they need something, right? So you get to the point where you're like, a quiet time, you know, 20 minutes of quiet time, I go swim in the ocean for like an hour. It's like a 3-week vacation. I feel so good. But you know how hard it is to get in the ocean for an hour?
For an hour, yeah.
It takes an act of God. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I start weighing these things real heavily about, you know, wants and needs and time. And I guess getting back to the question, I don't know what causes that click.
Yeah.
Because it never used to be. It used to be a click of, my time is worth so much. So, should I do the gardening or should I hire a gardener? Well, if I can get a gardener for $20, it would take me 4 hours to do it. No brainer. My time's worth way more than that.
Right.
But now the mindset's a little bit different. It's like, you know, how much of my free time do I have to give up to do something?
Right.
And I think that's become my whole mindset.
Have you ever heard of, it's really recent, but these two guys, they call themselves the Minimalists?
No.
So there's these two guys that, had six-figure jobs, houses, cars, had quote-unquote everything, and were the most unhappy people on the planet. And they quit their jobs, sold everything, moved to some tiny little cabin in Montana, and are the happiest people. And they go on speaking tours, and they've just taken everything that they don't need and got rid of it. You know, this month they were doing something where every day you would give something away that you don't need, but that number increases every day. So July 1st, you gave away one thing. July 2nd, you gave away two things. So by the middle of the month, you're like running into like 15 or 20 things that you got to get rid of, you know, and it's a hard thing to do, but that's the lesson. You know, and it's, and they're so much happier from doing all of this, you know, and I get a little envious of that sometimes.
Yeah. Happy is a weird term. Happy is, you know, one day I remember I woke up and discovered that, you know, 90% of the people I knew were on some kind of a drug to be happy.
Yeah, they needed something else.
Prozac. I mean, I don't know what the drugs are called. And I said, when does it happen when you go through your life and you come to a point where you're just not happy? It's not my mindset.
Yeah.
When do you get to that point where you just, I got to take a pill to be happy, which completely changes your body, I think.
Right, and your mind. And,
yeah. And yeah. even then, you're not happy. You're numb. From when I talk to my friends, they're pretty much in a numb state.
Right.
Where you smoke a joint and get numb, you know. And I'm like, I don't know how that happens. But happiness is such a, people are always looking for something to be happy. And it's not, you can't even look for it. It's just,
It is, I think.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's a relationship with God. It's whatever it is, but you can't look for it.
So how would you define happy?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Happy for me is, boy.
That's a loaded question. I know.
Yeah, and then I start to get into religion, and then my wife says, "You're so gaudy." And I said, "I am." And she says, "Oh my!" You know, I said, "I'm not going to preach to you. But there's something very wonderful, if I can say it, and you know, I think everybody finds their own path and finds their own thing,
right.
But I have found I'll back up a little bit. You know, I had some 2008, 2009 for me. I mean, I make half, less than half of what I used to make now. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw some stuff crush. I saw, you know, we had a won't go into detail, but a huge company went down the tubes. Okay. We had about, we had a lot of money. $300,000 invested in it, you know. I mean, we tanked, and very tough time. And I was trying to struggle to find out, you know, where do I fit in this equation? Who am I? What do I want to do when I grow up? Kind of thing. And I kind of, you know, I went to my in-law said, "Hey, why don't you go up to church with us?" I said, "You know what? I'm going to go." You know, and so I went, and everything that was being talked about was directed to me. I said, "I got to go back." So I went back again. Everything they talked about was directed to me. You do that enough, and you're like, "I got to get this. There's something here." And so then I started up this one-on-one relationship, you know, with God, and it's, there's something really happy about whatever comes. If I can handle it, I do it in a fashion that reflects that relationship.
Okay.
Whatever is better for everybody else, you know? Mm-hmm. If somebody wants your jacket, give them your jacket and your shirt.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, give it all. Who cares? And then the stuff that I just don't feel like I can handle, there's something so wonderful to just give it away. Yeah. You know, I just say, "You know what? God, you take care of this one. I can't deal with this." And I always tell my son, you are one of the problems. That's why I have this such a close relationship with God, because he's into this whole big wave monster surf stuff. And so the whole family's like, you know, "You're such a, what kind of a dad are you?" I said, "You know, he's 17, it's a rite of passage. I mean, if I tell him no, he's going to think
he's going to do it anyway.
You can't do it."
Yeah.
Or he's going to go do it on his own
with
inadequate equipment.
Right.
So we have the best boards made, and, you know, I go with him. And, you know, he's up at Mavericks, you know, and this massive stuff. He's down at Todos Santos. We travel, and he surfs these waves, and I watch, because there's no desire to go out. And that's something I just give it up, you know. Say, hey, God, you gotta take care of this because it's way out of my league.
But you get a sense of happiness out of giving that up?
I don't get happiness, I get peace.
Yeah.
And peace is happy.
Peace, yeah, definitely.
And so I guess if I have to sum up happy, it would be peace.
Peace.
And I think whatever that is, whatever gets you to that place, when you can be completely peaceful, especially in an extreme environment or anything that's going, we all live in these stuff, sirens are everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Whenever you can get to a point of peace, oh man, the happiness is just, you just smile. It's like, ah, peace.
Ah, peace.
Yeah. We're back to the 70s.
I wouldn't mind that, actually.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? I mean, I'm always happy, but to get to the state of peace, maybe 2 minutes a week. You know, I mean, to get to that complete peace.
Bliss.
But, you know, 2 minutes a week is enough to keep me going for a while, you know? But I don't know. I went way out on a tangent there.
No, that's good. A lot of these artists, I also write a lot. I try to. But when I do write, I get in the zone. And that's, I find that peace because I've got these blinders on and nothing bothers me. And I'm just going to town, you know, and I just feel, you get that sense of, oh, this is great, you know, this feels so good to get all of this out, and, or do whatever it is you're doing, and it's just peace.
Yeah.
It all of a sudden, it just goes silent, you know, and it's just you in that moment.
That's when it flows.
Yeah.
And then, but, you know, the stress isn't so much when you're creating it, it's when you're trying to perfect it, right?
The editing part. Yes.
It blows the whole process.
Yeah. That's not peaceful. That is not happy.
That's because you're thinking about it.
Right.
The other stuff you're not thinking about, right?
Right.
But once you have to start to think about it, oh.
Can you imagine if we all just acted on that and just was like, we don't think. But unless some people do, and it really doesn't work out. You know?
Yeah.
But if it always worked out where we could just act on instinct, like, not like, I don't want to say act like an animal, but, you know, they act on instinct, you know, and it's just, it's...
And I think we were probably developed to act on instinct. We have it.
We have that gut feeling, so to speak.
And it's powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I've ever gone against my gut feeling, I've screwed myself.
Yeah.
You know?
What's that that book and movie, High Fidelity? Have you ever seen that?
No.
The John Cusack.
I got to get like a list here, write this stuff.
Yeah, I'll send you an email. Don't worry about it. But it's about this guy who works at a record store. He owns a record store, and he's going through a reflection of past relationships, you know. And one of the lines he has is, and I'm totally paraphrasing, but some of the effect of I used to always listen to my gut, but I've come to find out that my gut has shit for brains. You know? So it's like, sometimes going with the gut doesn't always work out, but majority of the time.
I think intuition is, for me, it's always been right, but I try to overthink it.
Yeah.
And sometimes...
That'll get you in trouble.
Intuition's easy. Yeah. I mean, it's your first thought. It's like, if I can't make a decision on something...
Yeah.
And I tell this to my family, too. I say, you know, they go, hey, we got to make this decision. I said, you know what? Sleep on it. When you wake up in the morning, the first thought that comes to your mind, that's what you do.
Right.
And I live by that. If I can't figure out a problem, I go to bed. When I wake up in the morning, I think about it. The first reaction, that's what I do.
Do you feel rested, even though...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Okay, yeah. So your brain, you don't feel like your brain has been going all night trying to figure it out.
Nah, I got some little things I do before I go to bed just to, and like I said, when I get to bed,
you crash.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, it's good.
I love that.
At peace.
I love it. I say when I'm dead, this whole thing is going to be worn out. You know, I donate my parts, but who wants to buy used up parts?
By that point.
Yeah. You'd have to have a pretty shitty heart to want mine.
You know, people take whatever these days.
That's so true.
You never know.
We can keep you alive for one more day if you use his heart.
It's always something on the next corner. So, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up on that. We've talked a lot.
Sorry.
No, I don't mind at all. I loved these podcasts that go forever. So give us an idea how people can find you and the company, Hey Chris Inc.
Oh, yeah. Hey Chris Inc. You can call 800-243-7914. I sound like a commercial.
Yeah, I know. I was waiting for the jingle to come in.
Call us today. No. And then you can email me, too. You can email me directly at dan@heychris, HAICHRIS.com. And, those are the best ways. I mean, you could drive by, but then I have to give the address. But if you email, I'll get you the address and stuff. But
do you have an online presence outside of that?
We have heychris.com as a website.
Okay.
And
Facebook, Twitter.
No, I think we're on all that stuff. We just never use it.
Never use it. Okay.
Yeah, and funny, we had a meeting this morning about setting all that stuff up and really getting into it.
Uh-huh.
But I think right now we're just working on our living social network here.
Sure.
And you know, at one time, and we'll get to this level. I just got to remember to be patient. Things happen. They'll happen, but they have to happen in their own time, not in my
you
time.
You grow into it.
And but we have a concept of having a pool table and coffee bar and all this stuff here,
mm-hmm.
so that people and stations with computers and all the software on them, so that people could come here and hang out and work on their art or play a game of pool or hang out and make it a total communal thing.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And then somebody could say, hey, I need to get these prints done. Or you're going to have to wait 20 minutes. Nobody cares. They're hanging out.
Table, yeah.
You could go over, here's a desk. Take that desk with the system on it and do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
You know? And so eventually we'll grow into that. I have a vision for this shop of the future.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. So I'm in San Diego for a while, and it sounds like you are too.
Oh, I'm dying here, man.
Yeah, there's no place else to go.
My ashes are going to be an OB.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's not a bad place for it, actually. Nothing wrong with that. So, but Dan, thank you for sitting down. We were supposed to sit down with Patrick as well, but he a little under the weather. But I'm glad we got to sit down and talk about all this stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, and it's been a blast. I ramble. It's
good.
But thank you very much.
I have to say, I really like how Dan gets the value of building relationships with the people that come into his shop. In a world that's, seemingly becoming more and more technology-oriented and less human-oriented, it's nice to see someone who still holds on to that important... value that importance of human interaction. I'm not saying that we live in an iRobot kind of world. I'm not at all. But I do worry sometimes that a good face-to-face conversation is going to become a thing of the past, and I don't want to see that happen. I mean, then again, that said, I even struggle with ebooks or books on tape. I can't do it. I need that feel and smell of the paper. I also liked how he brought up exploiting your benefits. I mean, what are you doing differently? That's a really good question to ask yourself sometimes. It can be humbling. But I think this doesn't just apply to business, but it can really apply to your art as well. So I thought that was really interesting that he brought that up. And really, this conversation, it shed a great light on, an important facet of comic creation, at least in terms of print comics. Once the comic's ready and you've got it all, how do you find that place to... print your future, basically. I mean, how do you find a place you can trust? And I think Dan really helped out with that. So Dan, thank you very much. That was a really great conversation, obviously because it was face-to-face. But, there was just some really great information in there for people wondering what to look for in the printing world and how to find a good printer. So again, thank you. That was great. Next week, we have a fantastic, just as fantastic conversation, another great episode, this time with an author of Manga Studios for Dummies. That's right. That's going to be a good one. So, as usual, go to the website, check out the newsletter, subscribe for that up at the top, click on that. The website, of course, makingcomics.com. You can also, while you're there, sign up for the Daily Mini Challenge. This is a quick, if you don't know, this is a daily challenge sent to your email address. And it's about no more than 20 minutes, a little brain waker upper. It's a really cool thing. So sign up for that. Also, if you got questions about what you are doing and you maybe are really itching to ask that question, definitely ask that question. Go to Twitter, ask the question to @DevinAfterDark, DEVIN. make sure you do hashtag FAQ Devin. This is for our awesome editor-in-chief, Devin Larson. He's really got some great advice for the people that are asking questions. So definitely send it in. We want to help you out if you need some help, need some assistance. You can find me on Twitter while you're there. If you want to say hi or follow me, I'm at SDGreeny, SDGreeny. I don't know, I don't tweet a lot, but I try to tweet when the thought strikes me to tweet about the previous thought that struck me. I don't know. If you didn't follow that, I don't know. It's a great thing about podcasts. You can rewind it. So that said, since even podcasts are good to you, be good to people.